March is Women's History Month, and Paul Bunyan Broadcasting is teaming up with the United Way of Bemidji Area, Women United, and the Beltrami County Historical Society to celebrate the legendary women of Beltrami County. And that includes with the Living United podcast. This month, we'll have weekly podcasts featuring women who have made huge impacts in Beltrami County and the women who are making tomorrow's Beltrami County history today. The Legendary Women of Beltrami County is presented by First National Bank Bemidji and North Homes. And we will hear from the Legendary Women of Beltrami County next.
At First National Bank Bemidji, you can think of us as your neighbor, because we are. You can see it in the familiar faces when you stop in. You hear it in the friendly voice when you call. Our prompt service and local decisions inspire trust to handle your biggest dreams. Whether you're buying a home or opening your first checking account, work with the bank that knows what community really means. First National Bank Bemidji. Better together. Member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Danae Alamano, and this is Living United.
And I'm Kev Jackson. Danae, who's our guest today?
Me.
Yes. Danae is our guest today as we kick off a special series throughout the month of March, tying in with something we're doing throughout the radio stations called The Legendary Women of Beltrami County. Mm-hmm. And it is, March is Women's History Month. And there have been a lot of women who've done a lot of big things in Beltrami County over the years. Mm-hmm. And we're going to not only look at some of these women, but look at the women who are making tomorrow's history today.
Yes, and, future women of history.
And we're going to do both today, even though you're being demure and you know, saying, no. But we got to talk about you, too. But we're going to start with somebody you know a little bit about. Mm-hmm. Who is one of the legendary women of Beltrami County, and that is your great-grandmother, Dr. Mary Chapin Ghostly.
Chapman.
Chapman, I'm sorry.
Chapman Ghostly.
Mary Chapman Ghostly. Mm-hmm. So let's start there. Who was Dr. Mary Chapman Ghostly?
Mm-hmm. Huge inspiration to me is who she was. Dr. Mary Ghostly was born up in Canada. She had a brother who had a disease that was incurable. I don't know what the disease was, but it's what made her want to be a doctor. She wanted to be able to help people with unsolvable issues and so on. She received her doctorate degree in 1909. She met her husband, Fred Ghostly, in doctorate school, and they moved to International Falls for a short time. Bit, which is where I grew up, mm-hmm. And then moved to Black Duck, okay. And we're doctors together in Black Duck. Only for a year, Fred actually ended up with typhoid and passed away. So she moved back up to International Falls for 20 years before she then was at the sanatorium in Petoskey.
And so that's where she really comes into her own in Beltrami County, starting there, the very, very famous sanitarium. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the sanitarium for those who don't know, what mm-hmm. it was about, mm-hmm. and what she was doing there.
Sure. Well, it opened somewhere around 1916 and was for tuberculosis patients. There was a doctor there, and it was, you know, out alone. There's no... It's still the same way. There's no city surrounding that area or anything like that up in Petoskey, and wasn't back then either. And that was because it was believed to be airborne. My grandpa would tell us that it was not airborne, or it came to be found that it wasn't. But there was a doctor there before Dr. Mary. He was there about 10 years, and no one was taking this position when he left. Because it was really poorly paid. $100 a month was the pay. Mm. And you lived there as well. But I remember my grandpa saying, and it's a quote I feel like I say in my head often now, is someone has to do it. So she did it in 1926. She started as a superintendent there.
And that, how long was the facility open?
It closed in 1953. Okay. So quite a while. She was there.
And what I mean, it's a pretty famous place. Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot about it. So what I mean, how many people came through there? Do you have any idea? And
I know it held 52 patients at a time. I'm unsure how many people ended up going through there and, you know, the amount of time it was open.
And then after that, what happened? I mean, she continued to work in medicine for a long, long time.
She did. Well, and maybe I should even back up. When she was in I-Falls for the 20 years she was there, she did a lot of in-home work and would take like horse and buggy or even a canoe because there's lots of islands up there to serve her patients. But she delivered over 2,000 babies up there. Wow. So that was before the sanatorium. And after that, she worked as the director of public health, District Number 1 for the state of Minnesota, and she got stationed in Bemidji.
And what did that entail?
I really am unsure. I feel like I hear a lot about her work in International Falls. She was huge in our women's right to vote. We actually have pictures of her in a parade with the League of Women Voters, and the parade is right outside one of the houses that I lived in International Falls.
Oh, really?
Kind of crazy. I'm very sentimental about those kinds of things, so it's a really neat thing to me. And we found out, too, later that she also rented an apartment. She called it a flat in that house that we lived in. So it was just crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
And people, I guess, probably, you know, they know it was fairly rare, but, I mean, how rare was it for there to be a female doctor in that time frame?
My grandpa would often talk to us about it was unheard of. And, you know, you think community or publicly there was not an understanding of why she would want to do that. But even within her own classmates, male doctors just not wanting her to do it, not believing that she should. So she didn't have an easy road to become a doctor, but obviously married someone who believed in her. Read a lot of their love notes back and forth. It's really, they're really sweet and very in love. And it was really neat to see his support of her in a time like that.
Do you know much about how the community accepted her as a doctor?
I don't. I know what people think of her now, but I don't know how difficult that was for her back then. I know she really was very appreciated by those many families who needed an in-home doctor to care for them, and to have her be able and willing to take, like I said, horse and buggy or a canoe or whatever to help them, often getting paid with a chicken or a dozen eggs or, you know, something that wasn't monetary. I think she was very appreciated.
Okay. Well, and obviously she left quite a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Your grandpa, also a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yep, a dentist.
Yes.
Yep.
And that was here in town for many, many years.
He was, Dr.
He fixed
Jim
a lot
Mosley.
Of people's teeth.
He did. He did.
Now you're seeing, I mean, obviously that she's been well-known, she's been mm-hmm. well-regarded. There's, I think they have records of her in the History Center now, I believe, correct?
Yeah, actually, when the newest director, Emily, started at the Historical Society here, I was telling her about my grandma, and they have the University of Minnesota did a replica of the sanatorium that's sitting in there. She's actually on the front stoop of the place, but she also brought me upstairs, and they have her medical books up there too, which is just fun for me to get to see. And yeah, all those things I just really appreciate about her. We had a cabin up in International Falls that was in our family for 100 years. She bought it. And actually, it was just sold a few years ago now. But a lot of the stuff in it is now in my home, like my dining room table, or there's a hutch, or, you know, just all these little pieces that are historical pieces of my family that mean a lot to me. And who I am now is based off of her and my other grandparents and great-grandparents as well.
And you're not the first person to be interviewed about your great-grandma. Your dad, or your grandpa, rather, your mm-hmm. grandpa, was indeed on Chatabout talking about this one at one point.
He was, yes. He's had a lot of different opportunities to talk about her. But yes, him and he was interviewed by Todd Haugen. I actually refreshed myself on it before this interview to make sure I had my facts straight.
Were there any just cool stories he had about her in general that are worth repeating?
I think, well, there's stories my mom has told me. My mom is Barb Ghostly Fisher. Everyone who talked about her in our family, like all of her grandkids, my mom and her siblings and cousins, would talk about how she had an amazing way to make you feel like you were very special to her. You were the one and only person that mattered, and I think that's a lot of, there's a value in that still when people can really hone in on somebody and figure out what their strengths are and what makes them tick and all those things, right? Mm-hmm. But my mom always tells a story. I don't know if it was on her 80th birthday or if she was in her 80s, but my mom was going to be swimming with her friends, and they didn't want to play with my mom. I don't know how old my mom was at the time, but young. And, you know, back then women would get their hair done for, what, the week or a couple weeks' time, so you did not get your hair wet after you got it done. And Dr. Mary told her she'd go swimming with her, and she even went underwater and got her hair wet. That was a big deal. And once her friends saw that her grandma was in the water, they wanted to come back in and swim too. And my mom was mad and told them no. And my great-grandma said to her, "Now, Barb, that's not any way to make friends." So that's just one I always, you know, she's used on us for various reasons growing up.
So, and of course, you were telling me before we went and started recording, she had to work into her 80s because she was a woman, she didn't get retirement?
Yeah, there's no retirement, so she worked for a really, really long time.
Wow.
Because there was no other way to have any income. I know she lived with my grandpa for a while. She lived till she was 94, so long life. I believe, I don't know if she died in Havenwood, but we still have Havenwood here in town. She was in that facility for a while. So.
But men got retirement.
Men got retirement.
Mm-hmm. Women didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That seems fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Hence her League of Women Voters pursuit. So she's always someone, or what I hear, or, you know, you hear all these stories, but when you bring that up a level, she did things because someone needed to do it. That's always the, someone needs to do this, someone needs to make this better. And she was not afraid to be that someone.
Okay. Well, and that brings us to part two, when we talk about people making tomorrow's history today. And certainly as the executive director of the United Way, you are a person involved in a lot going on in this community. Obviously, everything I know about you professionally, I remember when you were in college and you were mentoring high school kids at our church.
Yes.
I remember that you worked for the American Cancer Society trying to help that great cause. And now so many causes through the United Way. And since you've been there, so many things that have expanded. So obviously you have a heart for doing this. I would think some of that is in the DNA.
Oh, well. You know, you can say that, Kev, but she adopted my grandpa.
Oh, okay.
She adopted two kids. Kathy was a year older than my grandpa, and my grandma, great-grandma, delivered Kathy, my great-aunt, from a single woman who, I think she was young and needed to give up the baby. And then my grandpa's mom died of toxemia, and a traveling nurse came around to the sanitarium and told Dr. Mary about this baby whose mom passed away, and that he was green because he had toxemia too. And so she's like, well, you know, nurse him back to health, and fell in love with him and talked to his biological father, who had a bunch of older kids and were very poor, and ended up adopting him. So it's not in the DNA necessarily, but I mean,
it's in the nurture.
Yeah, my grandpa Jim did do a lot for our community too. He's the president of every board in town, and made some wonderful things happen. So I have a deep rooted love for this area, and was definitely raised thinking women could do anything. I didn't even know that we couldn't until I was much older, or that at some point we couldn't. So, and that didn't just come from my grandpa Jim, but my parents both always told me that.
Well, her great-grandmother was definitely a legendary woman of Beltrami County, and Danae Alamano is definitely a legendary woman of Beltrami County right now. She is one who is making tomorrow's history today, and we'll talk about her journey next on Living United, the legendary women of Beltrami County.
North Homes Children and Family Services is seeking mental health professionals and clinical trainees at our Bemidji outpatient clinic and school-based programs. We offer a collaborative and supportive work environment, training allowance, and student loan forgiveness programming. Along with other generous benefits and PTO, there are career advancement opportunities. For more than 30 years, North Homes has worked to keep families together and connected to their communities. To apply, visit northhomes.org.
Well, let's talk about your journey. Obviously, you were familiar with Bemidji, mm-hmm. having grandparents here, mm-hmm. and you went to college here, played mm-hmm. some basketball, and then you were a basketball coach for a while.
I was, yes. So, born in Bemidji, left when I was 7 years old.
Okay.
And then came back for college, like you said. I actually didn't come here to play basketball. I got injured my senior year of high school playing powder puff football and dislocated my elbow and had two surgeries. I'd learned how to play left-handed just so I could play a couple games at the end of my senior year. But I did love basketball. I was actually playing a pickup game in the rec center with a bunch of boys. I think they were like a Red Lake basketball team, and there was a brand new coach at BSU women's basketball who was working out there and came up to me after and asked if I'd try out because he lost players on his team. I'm like, yeah, I'll try out. And made the team, but was so out of shape. I got injured again. Went into his office saying, you know, I know I'm not helping. I'm just holding things back, but thank you for the opportunity. It's very emotional because it was like so exciting to me to actually get the opportunity I'd hoped for. And he said, well, how about coaching? And so that got me. I was a student coach that year and then became the grad assistant for a couple years. Coached over in Kenosha, Wisconsin at Carthage College for a couple years. Actually, that's good basketball over there. That was fun. Made it to the national tournament the years I was there, which is exciting. And I think a lot of that shaped who I am, coaching or bringing people together for a common cause, putting people in the right positions for the right reasons. All of that, I feel like, just exploded in my work now at United Way.
So why did you decide to discontinue coaching and move back to Bemidji?
Well, Orlando and I met, and my husband mm-hmm. met at BSU and didn't date till after. He says he asked me on a date like a week after he graduated, so it wouldn't be embarrassing if I said no, basically. But he came to Kenosha, and we actually got married in Bemidji, living over in Kenosha.
Okay.
It's a 10-hour commute.
Wow.
Yeah. Lots of conversations and the rides back and forth. But really, I was barely getting to be a wife, and I ultimately wanted to be a mom. And coaching, I know people can do it, but it just wasn't what I wanted with all the nights on the road and the weekends gone and stuff. I wanted to be more present.
Okay. So did you have a gig when you came back to Bemidji?
Nope. Came back for Orlando's job.
Okay.
You know, way back then, what was that, 11, 12 years ago? It was really hard to try to get a teaching job. That's what I went to school for. You had to sub for many years and get good recommendations from the teachers you were subbing for just to get a job. Now I feel like you could maybe walk in there and get one if you have the degree, just with the openings. But yeah, I was looking for work. I did a little bit of adjunct teaching at Carthage College in the health department. And so I was looking, you know, for all kinds of different opportunities. And the American Cancer Society was hiring and wanted someone with a background in health and recruiting experience. It was recruiting volunteers, but I had a lot of recruiting experience from college basketball. So I applied on a Friday and got an interview Monday and was hired.
Nope.
But I learned how to fundraise, definitely, through the American Cancer Society.
How many years were you there?
Five.
Okay.
Yep.
I remember talking to you, and you were considering applying for the United Way job.
Mm.
And I remember saying, yes, do that. And I'm so glad you did.
Me
too. I think
too.
Everybody's so glad you did.
It's been a ride.
So, I mean, it's a unique kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that gets you out of bed and to the office every day?
You get to help so many different people in so many different ways that, to me, that's community. Not that one cause isn't important, but one's not necessarily important, more important than the other. And the fact that we have the vetting system we have for the funds we raise, that we get to bring people together to solve community issues and create different initiatives and programming that help more people in Bemidji. It's just that elevated level of trying to help the whole pie, rather than just a piece of it.
A lot has changed at the United Way since you got there, and I'm sure you will deflect all the credit to many different people, as you should, but you obviously were the catalyst. You have a big staff now.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to do so many more things. There's a lot of programs going on. It's been a big change in the years you've been in charge there.
I remember getting hired and asking why the average stay of the United Way director was so short. I think it was maybe 2-year average or something like that. And the answer was that, you work with so many different places and people that you get plucked from the position. And I've actually had people wonder why I'm still there that have that thought or mentality too. And I get it, but the truth behind it in my eyes isn't that, I mean, yes, the women that were the directors before me built up the United Way. They did go on to big things. But what I presented to my board was, I get that they all moved on to these other things, but I don't find much of this sustainable. Like, as you have all those different directors and everybody added something to the plate of the United Way, it got to be an unsustainable piece. There were some great efficiencies put in, but it really took away from allowing other people to be involved in the United Way. And I just saw a bigger vision that if we were going to be a true leader in our community and if we were really going to meet the needs, our community was growing and we were still raising the same amount of funds for the community every year that didn't match. And just proposed to the board that we look at a bigger vision for the United Way. So we've done it really slowly and really calculated and making sure our admin fee stays really low and that, grants have become a big part of funding our programs and our staff time. And we've been able to really grow the campaign in big ways to allocate out more funds.
How many do you have on staff now?
There's 4.5 of us.
Okay.
So, yes.
4.5.
4.5. There was 1.5 when I started.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, so 3 more.
Okay. And again, doing lots of cool things. And one of the things you are certainly helping with is this project we're doing with the Beltrami County History Center and Women United, which is part of the United Way. And of course, Paul Bunyan Broadcasting. We're teaming up for this cool thing called the Legendary Women of Beltrami County. And so we will be having quite a few Living Uniteds this month, putting the spotlight on women from the past and women of the future. So I know you're lining them all up right now, but we're going to have some pretty cool people to talk to, I think.
We are, and the way we're pairing them, it's not so much like what you and I just did where I talk about my grandma who is no longer here and then talk a little bit about me. These women, it's going to be, women who paved a way and maybe are in retirement and then women who are just up and coming and doing some really cool things. So we're going to have some fun.
Yes, we are. That's going to be, there should be a new one out just about every week throughout the month of March. And plus Larissa is working on some we call them spotlights, where she'll tell stories of some amazing women from the earliest days of Beltrami County. And that's going to be going on throughout the month as well. So lots of celebration of women during Women's History Month here in Beltrami County. Danae Alamana, thank you for joining us and being part of this deal. And thank you for all you do every day. And thank you for telling us about your great-grandma, Dr. Mary Chapman Ghostly, who is quite a legend.
She is. Thanks, Kev.
It's Women's History Month, and the United Way of Bemidji area is teaming up with Paul Bunyan Broadcasting, Women United, and the Beltrami County Historical Society to celebrate the legendary women of Beltrami County. Many more great stories to tell this month on Living United.